In an era when American manufacturing was crumbling, one company defied all odds. While steel giants collapsed around it, Nucor rose from near bankruptcy to become America's third largest steel producer, all while maintaining a no-layoff policy and creating America's best-paid steelworkers. The architect of this revolution? Ken Iverson, whose leadership philosophy was so radical that Harvard Business School initially advised against his approach. Today, Iverson's book, Plain Talk, is required reading at top business schools, and his management style has influenced companies from Toyota to Google. What makes this story particularly remarkable is that Nucor achieved this success not through cutting-edge technology alone, but through a revolutionary approach to treating employees as genuine partners in the business. During the devastating 1982 recession that ravaged the American steel industry, Nucor's production plummeted by nearly 50%. Workers faced 25% pay cuts as operations reduced to 3 or 4 day work weeks. Yet walking through our mills during this crisis, I never heard a single complaint. This wasn't from fear or resignation. It stemmed from knowing the burden was shared fairly across the organization. Department heads took 40% pay cuts, officers 50-60%, and my own compensation dropped from $450,000 to $110,000. When a friend showed me an article listing me as the lowest paid Fortune 500 CEO that year, I felt no shame. The company wasn't performing, and I would have been ashamed to earn more during such difficult times. This pain-sharing approach helped us maintain our remarkable record of never laying off employees or closing facilities during economic downturns, even as the broader industry shed thousands of jobs. This wasn't mere altruism or rigid policy. We've always been transparent with employees that layoffs would happen if survival demanded it. But for long-term competitiveness, a company needs loyal, motivated employees. How can management expect loyalty if we discard workers during every economic dip while protecting executive compensation? Nucor has prospered in an industry where others struggled by rejecting the notion that managers and employees have inherently separate interests. Instead, we've united around a goal everyone can believe in: long-term survival. We run Nucor first and foremost to ensure there will still be a place for our children and grandchildren to work without fear of arbitrary layoffs. That's our higher cause. This long-term perspective means resisting pressure from Wall Street analysts who demand short-term earning spikes. We choose investors over speculators. Our employee relations are built on four principles: compensation tied directly to productivity, job security, fair treatment, and clear avenues to appeal unfair treatment. We have no performance appraisals or job descriptions. People earn according to what they produce, determined through simple, objective metrics. At Nucor, people get what they truly ought to from work: good pay, genuine job security, interesting challenges, respectful treatment, and pride in being part of a successful enterprise. We're no utopia, but we focus on mutual long-term interests that unite us rather than selfish short-term interests that divide. At Nucor, division general managers operate with extraordinary autonomy. They're handed complete control of multi-million dollar operations with just three words of direction: trust your instincts. Each division functions as an independent enterprise, procuring materials, crafting marketing strategies, finding customers, setting production quotas, and managing their workforce. All important decisions happen at the division level, where the general manager bears full accountability. This autonomy can be intimidating. In the mid-1970s, our Darlington general manager insisted on using induction melting furnaces instead of standard arc furnaces, a $10 million decision. When these furnaces proved problematic with rapidly deteriorating linings, his successor eventually decided to rip them out and install arc furnaces instead. Though costly, the company respected his decision-making authority. As Hamilton Lott, general manager of our Vulcraft division, explains, "We are honest to God autonomous. This means accepting some inefficiencies, like duplicated efforts across divisions, but the advantages of local autonomy far outweigh these costs. Joe Rakoski adds, "The beautiful part of Nucor is that we're not constrained. Headquarters doesn't restrict what I spend. The only requirement is that general managers generate at least 25% return on assets under their control." True autonomy comes with serious responsibility. There's no corporate safety net, just you and your team working together to succeed or fail. This is why we keep our division small, typically under 500 people, allowing managers to stay genuinely connected with employees. I don't order managers to connect with employees, but I do nag them about it. Different managers connect in different ways. Some meet with department heads daily, others quarterly, some walk the floor more than others. But they all must maintain meaningful connection, or they won't last. We've never fired a manager for not knowing steel production, but we have removed those who couldn't effectively lead people. We deliberately locate our divisions away from our Charlotte headquarters to maximize their autonomy. But delegation without information would be suicide. Our monitoring system is elegantly simple. Each division sends weekly reports containing just 6 key metrics: quotes, orders, production, backlog, inventory, and shipments, all fitting on a single page. While some paint me as a champion of decentralization, I'm no zealot. Companies like Walmart succeed with highly centralized operations. They even control store temperatures from headquarters. Neither centralization nor decentralization is inherently superior. Each works under different circumstances. The only valid reasons for wrenching transitions between approaches are changing your core business or responding to fundamental market shifts. Cost-cutting alone never justifies reorganization. Decentralized companies need mechanisms to maintain unity. At Nucor, division general managers also serve as corporate officers, meeting 3 times yearly to shape company-wide policies. These intense meetings feature healthy tension and spirited debate. People yell, pound tables, and argue passionately, which I consider positive. I worry when sparks don't fly. We've never fired a manager for not knowing steel production, but we have removed those who couldn't effectively lead people. We deliberately locate our divisions away from our Charlotte headquarters to maximize their autonomy. But delegation without information would be suicide. Our monitoring system is elegantly simple. Each division sends weekly reports containing just 6 key metrics: quotes, orders, production, backlog, inventory, and shipments, all fitting on a single page. While some paint me as a champion of decentralization, I'm no zealot. Companies like Walmart succeed with highly centralized operations. They even control store temperatures from headquarters. Neither centralization nor decentralization is inherently superior. Each works under different circumstances. The only valid reasons for wrenching transitions between approaches are changing your core business or responding to fundamental market shifts. Cost-cutting alone never justifies reorganization. Decentralized companies need mechanisms to maintain unity. At Nucor, division general managers also serve as corporate officers, meeting 3 times yearly to shape company-wide policies. These intense meetings feature healthy tension and spirited debate. People yell, pound tables, and argue passionately, which I consider positive. I worry when sparks don't fly. In 1962, after moving to Florence, South Carolina to manage Volcraft, I was invited to speak at what I later discovered was the local black high school. Despite my neighbors' warning that the school was a shambles, I found Wilson High immaculate, with happy, courteous students and professional teachers, a place where education was treasured. This stark contrast between perception and reality revealed how deeply segregation had divided society into we versus they. As a manager, I faced a practical dilemma. To make Volcraft succeed, I needed everyone working together as equals, despite the prevailing racial attitudes of 1962 South Carolina. My first attempt to address workplace divisions backfired when I tried my usual direct approach. The engineering manager politely corrected me. Don't burst into my office each morning at 10 a.m. and start talking business. Down here, we talk about other things first. My family, your family, football, weather, town gossip. Then, if there's time, business. This cultural difference gave me pause, but I adapted. A week after arriving, I knocked down the wall separating white and black employee locker rooms. I couldn't eliminate all we versus they barriers in the world, but I could inside Volcraft. You can't be passive about equality. You must actively destroy hierarchy. When I read about a Canadian company using same color hard hats, I immediately decided all Nucor personnel would wear green hats, eliminating the status symbols of different colors. Supervisors protested vigorously, claiming their distinctive hats were badges of authority and pride. We held informal seminars to convince them their authority came from who they were and what they'd accomplished, not hat color. Nucor operates with just four management layers: chairman/president, general managers, department managers, and supervisors/professionals, while typical Fortune 500 companies have 8 to 12 layers. Despite pressure to add more layers as we grew to $1 billion, $2 billion, and $3 billion in revenue, I refused. I never bought the old span of control theories limiting managers to 6 direct reports. Some Nucor supervisors effectively manage 40, 50 people. Since some hierarchy is necessary, employees must have an avenue of appeal when they feel management hasn't fairly addressed their concerns. At Nucor, anyone can call me or CEO John Correnti directly with complaints. I answer my own phone whenever possible and have no call screeners. Employees can remain anonymous, though most identify themselves. My objective during these calls is to listen, not immediately resolve problems. Being heard is liberating for employees. It shows they're not buried under bureaucracy. Sharing information is essential to treating people as equals and destroying hierarchy. We tell employees everything, holding back nothing. As John Correnti notes, this gives people the opportunity to do their best work and manage themselves effectively, especially since their incentive pay depends on group productivity. At our Hickman plant, when employees questioned a production bonus adjustment, General Manager Mike Parrish published comparative bonus data across all Nucor facilities, even though it could support arguments against the change. This transparency maintained trust, even when not everyone agreed with the decision. Pure equality generates pure effort and adrenaline. During emergencies like hot steel breakouts, everyone works together regardless of rank. The tone is urgent but controlled, with no deference to hierarchy. Afterward, even skilled specialists help clean up alongside everyone else. Employees consistently demonstrate their intelligence and problem-solving abilities when given freedom. At Nucor Yamato, shipping crews designed and built their own trailers when commercial ones proved inadequate. I'm often asked to explain Nucor's success. My answer? It is 70% culture and 30% technology. Our culture of equality, freedom, and mutual respect drives motivation and continuous improvement. It's our greatest competitive advantage. Yet few companies act on this opportunity because building such a culture requires consistency and genuine belief in treating people as you'd want to be treated. The remarkable productivity improvements at Nucor facilities demonstrate our people's capacity for innovation. Benny Gainey, Tim Patterson, and Calvin Stevens exemplify this, saving millions in maintenance costs, developing pneumatic pumps to keep steel strips centered, and finding countless ways to improve production. Despite being personally credited with Nucor's achievements, the truth is these frontline employees deserve the recognition. Business media wrongly focuses on CEOs as celebrities while ignoring the thousands of employees who actually fulfill company goals. Even if you've never graced Fortune's cover, the excessive credit given to executives can distort your perspective. Too many managers withhold information and attention from employees, rarely soliciting their advice or entrusting them with important assignments. This creates emotional detachment. Employees become zombies waiting for quitting time. Meanwhile, insecure managers downgrade their perception of employees, hoarding information and expanding their own egos to fill the void. This keeps employees stuck in second gear, preventing businesses from reaching their true potential. At Coast Metals in the 1960s, I witnessed how environment shapes performance. After installing better lighting, a worker spontaneously began sweeping the floor, a task typically resisted when ordered. People's desire to improve and contribute is nearly universal, but environments can condition them into apathy. Rather than micromanaging, managers should experiment with both physical and cultural environments to unleash employee potential. Transitioning from command and control to new course management style isn't instantaneous. Most corporations were designed with the assumption that genius resided in management, while Nucor was built on the belief that genius would emerge from the people doing the work. Though businesses are spending billions on human resource development, recognizing employees as underutilized resources, most haven't figured out how to tap this potential. The next generation of senior managers must drive meaningful change. To succeed, you must advocate for spreading information to employees, giving them more responsibility for generating ideas, and increasing their decision-making powers. Companies should prioritize innovation, flexibility, creativity, and power sharing when hiring and promoting people. Managers must reallocate their time from planning and instructing to listening and analyzing, while providing employees with development opportunities, cross-training, and access to information. The great irony of modern business is that managers feel overburdened while employees feel unchallenged. The solution is clear. Recognize that employees, not managers, are the true engines of progress. Instead of dictating and monitoring, managers should focus on creating environments where employees determine what they can and should do. At Nucor, our ability to attract workers is remarkable. Hundreds of applicants line up for just a few positions. The secret? Money is a powerful motivator when properly used. While most businesses set fixed wages regardless of performance, we offer unlimited earning potential through our bonus system. Though base pay is below industry average, production employees can earn weekly bonuses of 100-200% above base pay by exceeding production baselines, resulting in average annual earnings of $60,000 in 1996. Our steel mill teams operate almost like independent businesses. Each group sets their own production goals beyond baseline, working together to maximize earnings. As Tony Myers explains, workers arrive early to prepare, like a football team before kickoff. We've got 8 hours to make us some money. In joist fabrication, riggers and welders move with remarkable speed and precision. Supervisors are just part of the team, sharing the same bonus. Peer pressure, not management oversight, drives performance. If you're screwing up your welds, everybody knows. New hires get 90 days officially, but the team knows within a month if someone will make it. Maintenance personnel share production bonuses, creating unprecedented cooperation between departments. For non-production employees, bonuses are tied to division return on assets, up to 25%. Department managers can earn bonuses up to 82% based primarily on division performance. Officers receive lower base salaries, 75% of industry standard, with bonuses tied strictly to return on shareholder equity, capped at 300% of base pay when returns reach 24%. Executive compensation at most major corporations is outrageous, not just the amounts, but how executives shield themselves from consequences. They award themselves bonuses even when companies lose money, claiming compensation is tied to company goals when it's really designed to pay them regardless of performance. Executives need downside exposure to stay focused on achieving upside results. Even if your company's work differs from steel production, you can still question compensation fundamentals. Middle managers shouldn't wait to be invited. Find executives who question the status quo and pose thoughtful inquiries. I wonder if we could get more motivation for our compensation dollars, or I wonder how closely employees connect their daily effort to their pay. Most compensation systems need more objectivity. subjective criteria invite disputes and lawsuits. While Nucor offers profit sharing and benefits, we see these as secondary motivators compared to our weekly bonus system. Profit sharing feels distant to most employees, paid annually and seemingly disconnected from daily work. Nevertheless, it helps employees prepare for their futures, with some long-term workers accumulating hundreds of thousands in retirement accounts. Our scholarship program, born from tragedy after workers died in 1974, provides $2,200 annually for each employee's child to attend college or vocational school, benefiting 700 young people at a cost of $1.4 million in 1996. Most managers expect too little from their compensation systems. At minimum, pay should drive specific behaviors that make your business competitive. Nucor's teamwork, productivity, low costs, innovation, morale, and low turnover all stem from our pay approach. Our compensation does more than prevent turnover. It gives everyone a simple stake in the business, tying each employee's fate directly to the company's success. In 1947, I landed my first job out of college as a research physicist with International Harvester, a corporate titan as vast as IBM or GM. Though I operated advanced equipment like electron microscopes in the physics lab, I learned my most valuable lesson when my boss, Chief Physicist Al Ellis, was gradually pushed out after bluntly correcting the chairman's naive question. Ellis advised me, "If you really want to do things in business, you'd be better off in a small company." That advice changed my life, leading me to leave the following year for a small foundry called Ilium Corporation. Bigger is better is business's underlying assumption. Companies boast about being the world's largest. Graduates flock to mega corporations, and executives build monstrous headquarters. Size does offer advantages. Customers often prefer market leaders, but it's no guarantee of success. Southwest Airlines proved this by innovating where larger carriers couldn't. Similarly, when Nucor entered steelmaking in 1967, we were tiny compared to the giants, yet we've captured significant market share through cost efficiency, flexibility, and innovation. Working in a small company lets you see how the entire business fits together. You'll learn operations, accounting, research, marketing, everything. This breadth prepares you for anything down the road. In mega corporations, you only see your small area. As chairman of the Ben Craig Center, a small business incubator, I witnessed entrepreneurs with enormous energy, faith in their ideas, and openness to new perspectives, qualities often missing in major corporations. Nucor's headquarters is unimpressive, just 12,000 square feet of rented office space with only 22 staff. I take pride in this. Elaborate headquarters waste money and create distance from operations. Ideas from headquarters often take on undeserved importance despite coming from people furthest from daily business realities. We also don't allocate corporate expenses to divisions, avoiding the arbitrary allocations that create resentment in most corporations. While conventional wisdom says businesses must locate near big cities, we prefer small towns. We moved headquarters to Charlotte when it was still town-like and placed divisions in places like Jewett, Texas, population 425, and Plymouth, Utah. Rural labor is an untapped resource. Whether from country or city backgrounds, people who thrive at Nucor share values I associate with rural America: self-reliance, resourcefulness, and creativity under pressure. Our headquarters is unimpressive, just 12,000 square feet of rented office space with only 22 staff. I take pride in this. Elaborate headquarters waste money and create distance from operations. Ideas from headquarters often take on undeserved importance despite coming from people furthest from daily business realities. We also don't allocate corporate expenses to divisions, avoiding the arbitrary allocations that create resentment in most corporations. While conventional wisdom says businesses must locate near big cities, we prefer small towns. We moved headquarters to Charlotte when it was still town-like and placed divisions in places like Jewett, Texas, population 425, and Plymouth, Utah. Rural labor is an untapped resource. Whether from country or city backgrounds, people who thrive at Nucor share values I associate with rural America: self-reliance, resourcefulness, and creativity under pressure. Our self-reliance extends throughout the company. Johnny Dawkins learned to operate Nucor Yamato's sophisticated rolling mill computers mostly through trial and error. At the executive level, our CFO, controller, and I prepare the annual report ourselves over a weekend, a job most Fortune 500 companies hire armies to complete. Unlike typical corporations fixated on prestigious universities, many of our managers graduated from small colleges, state schools, or never attended college at all. Can a large company regain the virtues of smallness? Perhaps, but it faces significant obstacles. Structure is one of the biggest. Peter Drucker wrote that any business needing more than 6 or 7 management levels is too big. At Nucor, we've grown to nearly $4 billion in revenue while maintaining just 4 management layers. The bigger is better assumption is so implicit in business thinking, we rarely question it. While bigger works in business, smaller works too. But there's no shortcut from big and bureaucratic to small and nimble. By spring 1954, I had left International Harvester to become manager of production and chief engineer at Ilium Corporation in Freeport, Illinois. My domain was a foundry in a 5-car garage with a concrete floor scarred from molten metal. Despite the grime and dust that blackened my fingernails, I loved this place. The management mindset that promotes innovation and risk-taking stems from a simple philosophy: life is an adventure. Even life's minor catastrophes can make you better. As a teenager, I wrecked my father's Studebaker after a jar of syrup rolled onto the gas pedal. Rather than just punishing me, Dad insisted I fix the car. It took over a year of serious effort, straightening the frame, replacing parts, hammering out dents, rebuilding the engine. When we finally got it running, Dad made it mine. This experience taught me not to fear mistakes. At Nucor, we say, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. Don't study an idea to death with experts and committees. Get on with it and see if it works. This approach leads to failures. Probably half our new technologies and approaches fail. Every Nucor plant has its storehouse of equipment that was bought, tried, and discarded. But these failures often lead to spectacular success, like our leap into flat-rolled steel using experimental thin-slab casting technology in 1989. Our new mills incorporate significant refinements over Crawfordsville, keeping our thin-slab casting technology on the leading edge. But we're not satisfied to rest there. In 1994, we broke ground on the first commercial plant designed to produce iron carbide, fine black particles processed from iron ore. This was our solution to reduce reliance on fluctuating scrap metal prices, our mill's largest expense. We tested every available scrap substitute before choosing iron carbide, which can be blown directly into furnaces and mixes into molten metal remarkably fast. We faced numerous challenges, including a costly $5 million mistake with heat exchangers, but production is steadily improving. There's a correlation between age and risk aversion. It's human nature to grow more cautious with experience and success. I've noticed myself becoming less comfortable with risk, and I consciously compensate for this inclination to play it safe. Risk aversion is deadly in business, especially in industries marked by rapid technological advances. As a senior manager, I've become a more deliberate champion of risk-taking than I was earlier in my career. Managers who avoid risk and fear failure cheat themselves, their people, and their companies. They cut themselves off from their greatest opportunities, deny their people chances to grow, and doom their businesses to underperform. Taking risks means you will fail sometimes. That's the price of playing the game. You must look failure in the eye. To determine which risks are worth taking, know yourself. Recognize how your fears and ambitions color your assessment of risks, but do place them, even knowing you could lose. And once committed, don't think about failing. Think about winning. Many managers struggle to accept Nucor's simplicity, expecting some hidden secret to our success. But simplicity itself is what makes us effective. We've eliminated complexity, hierarchy, and bureaucracy to focus solely on what matters: bottom-line performance and long-term survival. We don't distract with vision statements or vague objectives. Our strategy is straightforward: build manufacturing facilities economically and operate them efficiently. We start with cost-competitive facilities and maintain that advantage through ongoing productivity improvements, rewarding employees who produce more for less. At Nucor, our focus on long-term survival over short-term profits isn't revolutionary. It's just straightforward business sense. We share pain instead of enriching executives, push decision-making to frontline workers, minimize distinctions between management and employees, and pay for productivity. This creates an environment where employees at every level know our profit performance. From 1966 to 1996, we've grown at 17% annually, turned a profit every year, and paid dividends for 25 consecutive years. While flashier companies have come and gone, our consistent double-digit profitable growth continues because we keep things simple. Business schools aren't producing the managers we need. The MBAs we've hired from top schools arrive ready to conquer the world, but can't manage a department. They excel at finance, theory, and buzzwords, but struggle to communicate with machine operators. They lack basic people skills, despite management's core responsibility being to influence human behavior. Many pursue management for quick wealth rather than building lasting businesses, as evidenced by Harvard students who recommended against Nucor expanding our mini mills in the 1970s, a strategy that proved immensely successful. Business schools need two fundamental changes: revamp curricula to develop communication skills with employees, and require a one-year management internship in small business. The core curriculum should begin with people management before teaching technical skills. Essential subjects should include earning employee trust through understanding their work experiences, active listening skills to encourage information sharing, understanding the hazards of hierarchical power, and principles of equitable treatment. The Nucor story demonstrates that business success doesn't require complex theories or elaborate management systems. By focusing on treating people with respect, giving them meaningful autonomy, sharing rewards fairly, and maintaining a long-term perspective, any organization can achieve extraordinary results. The question isn't whether these principles work. Nucor's decades of success prove they do. The real question is whether leaders have the courage to embrace this straightforward approach in a business world that often values complexity over clarity and short-term gains over sustainable growth.